how does a price become what we see? And when we're talking about commodities like row crops and other ingredients, the fundamental side of it is supply and demand, right? So if we think about from the row cropper's perspective, they know historically what their yields are. They kind of can protect against some price risk and production risk. And there's a lot of packages out there that help them do that. But with, whether you're near an elevator or if you're pretty far, we often talk about basis and what goes into that price. So the basis is the difference between the futures and the spot price or the cash price for a producer. And they make decisions based off of that.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
DietForge.ai, AI-powered feed formulation with nonlinear ingredient modeling and real-time collaboration. Finally, modern software for modern nutritionists. Kemin invites you to optimize animal feed quality and safety with our portfolio of solutions. Learn more at Kemin.com/ag. Evonik, we are sciencing the global food challenge.
Welcome to the Feed Science Podcast. On behalf of Wise Genetics, I'm Adam Fahrenholz here at North Carolina State University's Prestige Department of Poultry Science and the Animal Food Manufacturing Program here. As always, thanks for joining us. Thanks for watching on YouTube or listening in your podcast vehicle of choice. We certainly appreciate the audience. And if you have any thoughts about future guests or things you'd like us to talk about, please do feel free to reach out and let us know. We're going to have some discussion today on some of the economics that go into decision-making with things like ingredients and market directions that might happen in the feed industry. So to talk with us today, my guest is Dr. Charles Martinez. Charlie is an assistant professor and director of the University of Tennessee Center of Farm Management. Charlie, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I've listened on and off in the past, and so it's cool to be here with you today.
Yeah, appreciate it. If you wouldn't mind, introduce yourself to the audience, give a little bit of your background, and then describe what it is you guys do there at the Center of Farm Management.
Yeah, so as you said, I'm Charlie Martinez, an assistant professor here in the Ag and Resource Economics Department at the University of Tennessee. And then depending upon the day, my hat. I have a research appointment, so I do a lot of research. And then I'm the state specialist for farm and financial management and also the director of the UT Center of Farm Management, which is where we have various programs that we put on, whether it's continuing education from a master farm manager standpoint or beginning farmer education. We also do tax school. And then we also have a team called the Manage Team, which works one-on-one with producers throughout the state. There's 9 of them. And we work with folks from small to large operations, from value added to cow-calf producers to some poultry producers as well. And so we kind of cover a wide range of topics, and every day is different depending upon what's happening. And then a little bit about me. I grew up about 30 minutes south of Dallas in Texas. I was a cow-calf kid. And growing up, I always liked agriculture. I knew I wasn't smart enough to be a veterinarian, so I found my way to A&M Kingsville, where I got an undergrad in ag business ranch management. If some folks have heard of the King Ranch Institute, it's their undergrad version. So I did a lot of different things, animal science basics. I did ag business, wildlife management, things of that nature. And during that time, I actually interned with Cargill Cattle Feeders in Bovina, Texas for 2 summers. And I did everything from the cowboy unit to the feed mill to managerial things, reading feed bunks, things of that nature. And I thought that's where I was going to head, was to the feeding sector. And then kind of took a left-hand turn whenever I decided I want to go get a master's. And so I ended up at Texas A&M University studying for a master's in ag economics. And while I was there, I switched to a straight through and got my PhD from Texas A&M in ag economics, focusing more on livestock production and livestock markets and information. And then I found my way here to the University of Tennessee in January of 2020. And since then, every day has been different, and we cover all kinds of different things with farm management.
You already know that the key to a profitable operation is healthy, productive animals. This starts with the quality and safety of your production inputs. Our team of experts at Kemin are driven by curiosity to develop science-backed ingredients and solutions to help you maintain feed and water quality, improve intestinal health, optimize nutrition, and eliminate pathogens. Learn more today by diving in at Kemin.com/ag.
Very good. Sounds like a pretty interesting path. A little bit of animal work there, a whole lot of econ and business work. So pretty cool. So as I mentioned in kind of the introduction there, I figure what we'll talk with the audience today about is kind of the economics that end up driving things that get into the feed side of stuff. So we're going to have folks that are interested in that from maybe some people that are actually doing purchasing, but obviously we kind of have folks on either side of the folks doing the purchasing. Maybe you've got people trying to formulate diets and they're trying to figure out what ingredients they're going to have available to them at a cost that works. And then we've got folks in the mills that are going to be told, hey, this is the ingredient that price is in. This is the ingredient you're going to have to figure out how to use. So when we think about the current like crop dynamics and I suppose even livestock market dynamics, when we get into things like rendered products and whatnot, how does that all in general impact the feed ingredient availability and pricing as we see the markets move around? And what does that look like today?
Yeah. So whenever, we think about feed price and specifically for us here in Tennessee, when we look around and we look at our feed costs for our producers, whether they're stockers and backgrounders or if they're cow-calf producers, they operate on a margin business. And one of the biggest costs is feeding. We even have dairy producers where we collect financial data and we monitor every year their feed cost and things. When we talk to them, it's how can we help them be more efficient? And oftentimes, one of the hurdles that we run into is, well, my feed cost was this year. It was, historically here, and it might be a higher or lower. And then they're trying to protect against price movements, whether they're selling or buying commodity. And, they often ask, what do we do? And so we always start with, how does a price become what we see? And when we're talking about commodities like row crops and other ingredients, the fundamental side of it is supply and demand, right? So if we think about from the row cropper's perspective, they know historically what their yields are. They kind of can protect against some price risk and production risk. And there's a lot of packages out there that help them do that. But whether you're near an elevator or if you're pretty far, we often talk about basis and what goes into that price. So the basis is the difference between the futures and the spot price or the cash price for a producer. And they make decisions based off of that. Well, then if you have a geographical area or a state or a group of states, you have different people making decisions at all times. Some folks, when they harvest, they sell all of their commodity as they harvest. Some folks will store it. And there's a cost to storage. And so they're trying to maximize that marketing dollar whenever they pull trigger and unload the storage and try to market. And so if we have all of that occurring at the farm level, we know that will then go towards, in our world, the feeding sector a lot, whether it's still here with dairy producers or it goes onto barges and goes down the river and goes somewhere else to get either crushed or put into soybean meal, for instance. And each one of these segments have a built-in cost, right? So if we think about each one of these commodities as a supply chain, every time it goes from one phase to another, there's an added cost because they're doing value-added production. If they're taking a bean and then taking it and crushing it and moving it into a different product, whether it's meal, oil, those are value-added functions that add price on top of whatever the base farm price is. And so oftentimes when we think about the feeding side of things, I remember when I was at Cargill feeding or the corn itself, it was actually really expensive at that time. We were coming off of the 2010 timeframe when bushels of corn had reached all-time highs. And managing through that became very critical at the feed yard level because it was, well, we can be at full capacity, but we don't want to think about or we don't want to have cattle on this expensive corn for long periods of time. And so those types of dynamics in the national scheme of things impact the producers, one from a demand standpoint. If you're a feeder, you're going to need the corn or you're going to need the ingredients. But you also got to think about, do I bring in lightweight calves and keep them on there long, or do I bring heavier calves, feed them out for a shorter period of time and get them out? And so all of that demand and interaction of supply it depends on what industry and what segment you are in a supply chain that it impacts them. But there oftentimes producers don't even, you know, think about downstream impacts from a demand standpoint and how it impacts price. And that's not even getting to the other decision for folks whenever they're planting right now. Ultimately, it sets the supply that we're going to have this coming production year. And so, you know, if we look at reports like the WASDE reports and we look at global production, those impact the decision making by producers right now that will then go on to be used in feed here in the fall and then going into next year. And oftentimes we talk to folks and you basically have three crops out there. You have your old crop, your current crop, and the new crop that's going to be coming, and you have marketing windows. And one of the things that was interesting with the feed yards is they hedge those commodities and they hedge in those prices for those animals that they were feeding. And it happens with the poultry industry when they're buying feed. There's, you know, a little bit different dynamics that happen, but along the whole supply chain, the people that utilize feed, they're for the most part hedging that risk out and trying to protect against price, you know, downfalls against them.
Gotcha. I want to ask a little bit more about the production trend thing, but first, question is maybe not be fair, and it's probably got a fairly wide ranging answer. But we always talk about, in fact, I hear it over and over when, you know, we go to maybe a scientific meeting and students get up and they talk about something related to nutrition, and every single talk seems to start with something like 75% of the cost of raising an animal is feed. Like I've heard that stat, like, I don't know, a few million times at this point. It drives me crazy a little bit, actually, because it's not new. But I am curious, from your perspective, how close is that number to what we think it actually is to raising animals? And obviously, you know, we got dairy, we got beef and swine and poultry and all this. And how much does it range? Is it kind of like, yeah, no, 70 is a pretty good number? Is it, I don't know, that can be, if things are cheap, that can drop as low as, you know, 55, and it can be as high as 90? Or what does that actually look like economically? Because we always just hear 70, 75 thrown out like it's gospel.
Right. So that kind of drives me up a wall too a little bit, because most of those numbers are used from USDA reports that they go out and they do basically a farm management litmus test, or ERS, Economic Research Service. They have a running state number and a national number that correlates to different groups. But the reality is it's a wide range. And so from a cow-calf perspective, people that are really forage-based production, it could be as low as 30, 35% one year. And then the next year, if you have a drought where you got to feed your way through, it could actually get up to that 70, 75, right? So it's very regional specific, but also year to year specific because of weather and trends of that nature. Dairy, for instance, it's pretty steady, right around that 60% for us here in Tennessee. Regardless of size, it's right around that number. We often try to help people think through how to lower that, whether it's trying to purchase feed at a lower cost if it's there, like recently as right now. You know, you get to the end of the year, and we see dairy producers quite often think about, well, price of corn's pretty cheap. I want to go ahead and do some prepay. So that way on their annual tax return, it's like, well, I already prepaid for next year. So you kind of get an accounting benefit, but you also get the benefit of a production cost. And right now, one of the things that we are trying to get a handle on, especially in the ag econ farm management world, is this talk about the ideal cow. And historically, everyone thought that weight was the best way to identify your most efficient animals. And we're finding out weight is really not the best indicator at all. We need to do a better job of understanding and doing research to find these optimal cows. And what I mean by that is you could have a 2,000-pound female out in the pasture, and she's doing her job and revenueing perfectly fine. And it's because she's actually intaking fewer inputs and is more efficient with that input as she's going through her production year versus a 1,500 pound female that on the books, it might look like she doesn't eat as much as the 2,000 pounder. But when you actually think about the optimization and efficiency of that animal, she's actually a worse performer. So we're trying to think about the world a little differently now. And especially when we know commodity prices here recently have been relatively low for feeders and for folks that are utilizing a commodity like feed as an input, it's been relatively low in terms of price. But we know that there's an upswing coming. It's a cyclical cycle. And so we know, we're trying to think about ways to be more efficient with those commodities whenever the prices become such that it's expensive to feed again.
Gotcha. Again, my guest today is Dr. Charlie Martinez. Charlie is an assistant professor at the University of Tennessee, working in the area of ag economics and farm management. So when we think about, you just talked about cycles and whatnot, we think about crop production trends that are going to drive feed prices and decision-making on purchasing. And obviously, again, it's going to be different beef and dairy and swine and poultry and all that. And I think something you just shared there that was very interesting is obviously the idea that anything that's using forage and pasture might be cheaper to feed most of the time, but it's going to be incredibly variable if all of a sudden you got to go find hay somewhere because there's a drought, as where the housed animals like poultry and swine are going to be more expensive to feed, or at least on a relative to the total production cost basis, more of their expense is going to be in feed, but it's probably less variable. It's relatively tight because it's such a controlled environment and you're not worried about droughts and stuff as much. But with all of those kinds of things in mind, when we look at the production trends that are then driving those ingredient prices, how far out do we actually look at those trends? We're looking at, obviously, to figure out like how we're hedging and the basis and all this kind of stuff, we're looking at pretty, I know for when we do our contracts for corn here at NC State Mill, right? I'll say, hey, I'm ready to do the next bid. And my brokers will come back and say, hey, corn report's due out tomorrow. I'll get back to you tomorrow. I'm not telling you anything until corn report's out tomorrow. And so I know on those kinds of things, when we're actually buying, we're looking really close. But when we're thinking about like trends and what things are look at, how far out are we looking on the production trends? Are we looking at what people are starting to talk about doing 2-3 years from now, upcoming crops and stuff like that? Or is it, the windows are so tight because of weather and whatnot that we got to think closer?
So I think the answer to that is it depends on who's actually buying. And the reason why is historically, most producers, they would, from a pricing perspective, which then would ultimately go on down the supply chain, a lot of folks would price as they pulled out or as they were harvesting in the field, and then they would make a storage decision and move on. But now we're actually encouraging folks on the producer side to think about pricing that commodity out at least 18 months if they can swing it. The reason why is because if we just take a simple, corn price contract right now, and you go out about 12, 18 months out right now on the futures board, those prices are pretty favorable. And we encourage them, hey, if you can lock that in, go ahead and lock it in, because we've already seen over the last 2 to 3 years, it has not been friendly to those producers. The caveat to that, though, is in order to hedge out that far out, you got to have some cash flow on hand to cover margin calls and things of that nature. And so it's one of those deals where if you can swing it, we encourage it. If you can't, then you become more of a micromanager in terms of watching prices to try to take advantage when you can. I mean, if anyone's been watching the soybean board, 2 weeks ago, it was not looking fun. And then last week, following some reports and some news that came out of, of South America and the world supply chain, the board started rallying such that we got corn right now. The March contract is sitting at almost 1140. And we haven't seen that in a while. And then from a spot price, we have not seen spot prices be at the levels that we currently have here in our state since the summer of 2024. And so we're almost 2 years, away from whenever we last were at these price realms. And if we're almost 2 years, it's not by accident that correlates with 18 months. And so from that perspective, I think it depends upon the type of business that people are running. In terms of how far out to go, if you're more in a confined, controlled environment like a poultry or a swine operation, and they're feeding, they probably can move commodity and be able to lock in prices as needed, because then you can also move that quicker through to the output, which ultimately is pork or chicken. Those supply chains, you can move it quicker down and price that such and your break evens. Whereas if you're in a longer feeding cycle like a dairy or a beef feed yard, you kind of have to look out further, because you got cattle that might be coming in 6, 7, 8 months from now. and you already got to know where that commodity is going to be when hoof hits the yard. You have to know exactly what you've hedged in on their feeding costs, because if you don't, you're exposing yourself to all kinds of risk. And from a feeding perspective, that's one of the last things you want to do is have the risk exposure out there. And there's tools like the Cattle Crush, for instance, that feed yards use to think about that. For us, from a producer perspective, further out is what we're starting to encourage. From a feeding perspective, it depends upon that segment of the supply chain and also which industry you're in. And I mean, a year out will never hurt anybody, right? Just as you start thinking about risk management, there is a cost to that, and it's an increased premium for that protection.
Okay, that makes sense. So in our last few minutes here, give you a chance, and I'm interested to hear about like some of the stuff you guys are looking at. So you mentioned risk. So, and you mentioned at the very, very beginning, one of your appointments there is to do research. So you're doing economic research and looking at how markets move and all that. So what do you guys see? What do you guys look at and find as far as signals in the market and the which data to look at, which data matters, which data maybe doesn't matter as much as we would have historically thought in order to manage that risk, especially if we are having to not just manage risk 3 months from now, but we're trying to manage risk over a calendar year away, and who knows what happens in that amount of time. So what does the research tell you?
So what we've been doing here recently, over the last, I would say, about 12, 13 months, is trying to use big data to our advantage now. We've now have got computers that, you know, back when we were younger, we'd probably think would take a supercomputer to run with all the big data that we have now. And so we actually are using this big data to our advantage and trying to build a dashboard where we can actually monitor in real life or in real time production by month, or in some cases, almost every 2 weeks, we can get snapshots of what production is out there in terms of how many acres are planted. We're using NASA imagery to update our progression or our projections of what yields are from a state level and by county level. So that way we can kind of use that in our projections in terms of where we think prices are going to go. Because we also know in the commodity world, it's a world market. The U.S. is obviously one of the larger producers, but our folks in Brazil, they are, you know, now the new gorilla in the room when it comes to what can happen to prices. And so we have reports that come out, like WASDE report that comes out every month that we monitor. But from our perspective, domestically, we need to have a good handle on production trends. And one way to know that is with historical data, whether it's weather data like PRISM data, NASA data, CropScape data layer data. And so we actually are building a dashboard to try to understand in real time what is out there, and kind of help our producers think about, hey, this year looks most like 2012. Here's what happened in 2012. Here was our yields. Here was our price movements. Here's what we can expect on the volatility that we saw during that time versus now. And so we're doing that part. It's kind of novel to an extent, just because it takes a lot of people to kind of, from a brain power standpoint, think that through. And we got some of the best mappers and GIS folks in our department. And so we're using our talents to do that. And then from, you know, from another research perspective, we've been monitoring beef on dairy and seeing, you know, we monitor all these financial side of things. And we saw that feeding cost is always our highest cost. But from a revenue standpoint, beef on dairy has had a large impact on our dairies, such that it's affecting, you know, how much commodity do they need. It's a new world from that perspective, because they're keeping cows longer. That's going to drive up your total cost of feeding. And so how does that, you know, intertwine and be incorporated back in the next coming years, and kind of thinking that part through. And then the other hat that I always wear is I love the fed cattle markets. Trying to understand market dynamics in that world has been relatively always fun for us. And so this new world screwworm, you know, thinking about the Mexican border being shut down and the impact on supply chains, and this beef on dairy again and how it impacts that. So we got a lot of different things that we're working on. I wish I had more time in the day, but it is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. No, the Fed cattle market stuff always one that strikes me and, you know, having, it's never been a huge part of my world, but, you know, having grown up in Kansas and went to school at Kansas State, always around a lot of people in that area. And a lot of that always kind of struck me as having a lot of reaction that went something like, wait, what? it seems like we should have been able to predict that this would happen, but then all of a sudden you get something out of some, you know, some sale barn in Southwest Kansas. All of a sudden it's like, this is what we just did on hundredweight this week. And everybody goes, I'm sorry. No, someone check that number, can't be right. And you find out it's right. And then and so I would imagine from like your perspective as sitting there as an economist and business manager, that's fun. Cause it's like, well, that can't be right. But at the same time, we have validated that it is right. So now it's a puzzle and we got to go find out why that happened, because it doesn't match with what we'd expect. And solving those puzzles has got to be the fun part, right?
Yeah, it's if you think about the Fed cattle world and how they're marketed, you have you have your feeding costs and you have a production cost. But when they go to market those animals, there's formula versus cash trade, the five big markets that they all interact differently. They all feed differently. And so it's always fun to try to figure out, you know, price interactions and what are the new problems that people are facing. And it's an ever evolving world that we have the computer power to do a lot of different models now that we've never had the chance to do. So it creates a lot of fun for us. And it's something that is also applicable and useful for the industry. And we're not a feeding cattle state, obviously, in Tennessee, but the fed cattle industry impacts us because we are a net exporter of feeder calves. And so what happens in that world impacts our producers.
Yeah. And you just always get the fun times of, you know, someone decided they were going to buy today. Somebody big decided they were going to buy and they weren't telling anybody. They weren't projecting that because they wanted to get price today. And then all of a sudden they showed up and they bought and it just took everybody by surprise. And then try to get the computer to understand that, right? Like, it's like, it did not fit in the model.
It's one of those things. Right now we do a lot of outlooks, beef and market, yeah. Beef and cattle outlooks, and I always give the caveat, this comes, you know, my projections come with an asterisk or a caveat that this is as of everything stands right now, and it's only as good as maybe tomorrow or even next week. But after that, there's always market information that has to be adjusted for.
All right, very good. It's a fun conversation. Always good to talk about kind of. At the end of the day, money makes the world go round. And so talking about how we make some of those decisions is always fun. So once again, my guest today has been Dr. Charles Martinez. Charles is an assistant professor there at the University of Tennessee, working in the Ag and Resource Economics. And he is the director of the Center of Farm Management, along with a lot of other hats, as he shared. So, Charlie, I appreciate your time. It's been a fun conversation. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you bet. All right. Once again, on behalf of WiseNetics, I'm Adam Fahrenholz at North Carolina State University. Thank you for joining us. Please do remember to like, subscribe, and let us know things that you've liked that you've heard and would like to hear more of, or topics we haven't covered yet. And until then, we'll talk to you the next time.
Feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.